Welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. I'm Joel Katz, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK University Medical Center. Keep getting better. Joining me this week is Dr. Sheila Sani, board-certified cardiologist and interventional cardiologist at Hackensack Meridian Health, also director of the Women's Heart Program, Sani Heart Center, part of Hackensack Meridian Health Medical Group. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Before we get into Heart Month and everything else involved, I'd like to learn a little bit about you. How does one decide and become a cardiologist? Doesn't happen overnight.
You're right. It's an excellent question. And it starts with passion for medicine, because cardiology is a medical subspecialty as opposed to a surgical subspecialty. But what's amazing about cardiology is that you have access to doing incredible procedures on patients. So you really get that hands-on experience similar to a surgical subspecialty. But my passion for the field really started at a quite young age, even in college, when I was a human science major and I was exposed to the pathophysiology of the heart. I was really fascinated by it. And then in medical school, I just built on that passion. In my cardiology electives, I loved seeing how there was a field that was so data-driven, mm-hmm. where you had so many different elements to help support or reject the diagnosis. And, you know, that carried through in medical school and as also in my residency training when I did rotations in the cardiac care unit. I loved taking care of patients with heart attack and heart failure and arrhythmia issues. And ultimately that led to my cardiovascular training, where I was chief fellow and I pursued a year doing interventional cardiology, which is the subsection of cardiology where you treat patients that are having heart attacks. You treat them for blockages in their blood vessels of the heart by placing a device called a stent.
And that's you said that's interventional cardiology.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, very interesting. Well, you certainly sound passionate, and it is very, very interesting. So let's talk about February being Heart Month, with the whole month dedicated to the education, to the awareness on heart disease. Why is this so important?
It is so important because heart disease takes more lives of women than all cancers combined. And I emphasize on women because what women have not realized, and some of this is because of the lack of science and the clinical trials that were done on women, mm-hmm. but for so long, heart disease, coronary artery disease, was thought of as just a man's disease. And so men understand that they're at risk for heart attack. But women have often thought that breast cancer is their number one threat, but that's incorrect. You know, one in three women will die of heart disease. That's one woman every 80 seconds. So Heart Month was created when we saw in epidemiologic data that we had higher rates of death in women compared to men regarding heart disease. And that's when a lot of national societies took a step in and said, we have to do something about this. So that's when the American Heart Association actually created the whole Go Red campaign.
What exactly is cardiovascular disease?
That's a very good question, because cardiovascular disease is often a confusing statement. It actually falls under two types of umbrellas. Cardiovascular disease can involve disease of the blood vessels of the heart, and it can also involve disease of the blood vessels of the brain. In fact, and when we talk about disease of the blood vessels of the brain, we're talking about stroke. In fact, when stroke happens to women, it is more malignant and more dangerous than when stroke happens in men. And so women are at risk for both, and it's their number one threat, heart disease and stroke.
Wow. Okay. So the symptoms are different between men and women, I would imagine, as well. Or are they the same? I don't know.
At the end of the day, the most common symptom of a heart attack will be the same between women and men. And that's often going to be felt as a chest pain or a pressure or a discomfort that comes on usually with exertion or even at rest. But the difference between men and women is mm-hmm. that women can sometimes follow a spectrum of symptoms that are more vague and not as specific as straight chest pain in the chest that's crushing and burning, like you see, like the typical Hollywood heart attack that a man is having.
Right.
Women can have more vague symptoms, such as nausea, shortness of breath, a new onset severe migraine, upper back discomfort, shoulder pain, jaw pain, and they can often talk themselves out of going to get immediate medical attention. Mm-hmm. That's what's really worrisome, is that any symptom that comes on between the navel and the nose, that comes on with exertion and goes away with rest, in a woman above a certain age profile needs to get checked out immediately.
Okay, I was going to ask you, because there are several symptoms. I'm sure people have these symptoms from time to time, but you're saying when a woman is exerting herself, any pain between the navel and the nose, if that comes on and then when you stop exerting yourself, it goes away, that's a sign. Even if it's just one, I mean, sweating, for example, is a symptom. Like, how do you differentiate so you're not panicking on every symptom, but you certainly don't want to ignore it?
Right. That's why it's so good that we're doing this radio show, right? Because awareness of one's body and awareness of what we feel on a day-to-day basis is what allows us to distinguish between what's new and what's just an ordinary headache or an ordinary mm-hmm. sensation of heartburn. We're looking for something new that came on because of some type of either emotional trigger or physical trigger. So women don't always get a symptom that's exacerbated by physical exertion. We need to also include in that exertion an emotional trigger. In fact, more women report an emotional trigger prior to a heart attack compared with men, who often report some form of physical activity prior to presenting with a heart attack.
So an emotional trigger could be an argument, as simple as an argument, or as tragic as the death of a loved one, something like that?
Both. Yeah. Absolutely. It has to be something very severe and intense. So loss of a loved one, financial news that was unexpected, a very intense argument either with an employer or mm-hmm. a significant other. These are intense moments of emotional stress that can really tip a woman over.
What about someone who has a very stressful job and this is bringing on some of these symptoms?
So I see a number of patients in my women's heart program that are suffering from stress due to job exposure. And I've had to work with them very closely on eliminating triggers, but oftentimes also had to remove the stimulus. So there are two types of stress. There's type A stress and there's type B stress. Type A stress is the kind of stress that when you encounter the stressor, you're able to react to it and release it. For instance, road rage. Someone says something that was unexpected, it frustrates you, you express yourself, but then it's gone. That type of stress, clinical studies have actually shown, even though it's not pleasant for people around you, you are able to get that stressor out. Mm-hmm. The difference, for instance, let's talk about of someone who's going through a very difficult divorce and is also having a very stressful job. And there's nothing they can do because their boss is very is mm-hmm. very high strung, has high expectations. And at the same time, they're dealing with a marital struggle at home. This creates type B stress, where the stressor is continuous and it is constantly weighing the patient down. That type B stress has been shown clinically to have a negative impact in one's overall health, especially in their relationship to cardiovascular risk factors. In other words, blood pressure goes up, blood glucose goes up, they stop taking care of themselves, they can turn into prolonged forms of depression, and all of that can have a negative impact in their overall health.
So what can one do about the type B? I mean, how do you deal with that? Because that's some heavy stuff.
Right. I mean, that's why a lot of times when people are going through that type of type B stress, there will be a symptom. So I see a number of patients that have a new diagnosed uncontrolled high blood pressure. So blood pressure used to be controlled, now it's not. Or they're developing headaches, or they're developing a chest pain and discomfort that doesn't necessarily turn out to be heart disease, but is a form of an abnormal heart rhythm called an arrhythmia. And it's all being stimulated by this chronic stress state. So, you know, that's why it's so important to break down each patient and to go beyond just the vital signs, right?
Right.
So we as physicians, we get a lot of data. But I spend a lot of time with my patients asking them about their emotional health, what they do for work, what their lifestyle is like when they get home. How are they taking care of themselves? I often ask patients all the time what they do for exercise. It's one of my second or third questions. And it gives a patient an opportunity for the first time to reflect on what's been going on. And that helps break the cycle. It's the first step. There's obviously a lot of work that has to be done when type B stress has accumulated, but it starts with taking action, and usually a strong patient-physician relationship can help stimulate that progress.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about women where the symptoms are not very strong, you know, not as obvious as the ones, you know, like the chest pain that you've mentioned? I know there's a condition called small vessel heart disease, or it's called coronary microvascular disease, which is prevalent in women. And does that hide that? Is it hiding the symptoms? How does that work?
It's such a good question. So we have to stop and talk about the science of how heart attacks form, because the way that heart attacks form between men and women can be different. In fact, when we bring patients to the, so when a patient is having a heart attack, we have to get that patient to the cath lab within 90 minutes of the presentation of their symptoms. And the reason mm-hmm. for that is because a blockage in the blood vessel of the heart equals dead muscle if we don't open that blockage up. But what studies have shown is that when women are brought to the cath lab, we don't see a blockage. But does that mean they didn't have a heart attack?
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily. And so that's where the understanding of microvascular disease has started to develop from, because we started to see that a lot of women were coming in, they're leaking enzymes consistent with having a heart attack, they're having chest pain, and yet when we bring them to the cath lab, there's nothing to fix. So microvascular disease is the condition that a lot of them are getting ruled out for, because microvascular disease is disease of the smaller side branches of major blood vessels of the heart. In fact, we have more microvascular vessels than we do major coronary artery vessels. So just because you didn't find a blockage and place a stent doesn't mean that a woman didn't have a heart attack. And so the reason why we are seeing this difference is that studies have shown that while men are getting total blockages, like just imagine a pipe that gets fully clogged with a cholesterol plaque, what we notice in women is they get more of a plaque erosion, where the plaque that's forming in the pipe is eroding slowly over time and then ultimately could get stuck in those smaller microvessels or could develop a spasm.
Okay, so when you
said that's another reason why the symptoms can sometimes be more vague in women, because it's not a sharp, abrupt closure of the blood vessel. It's more of a vague plaque erosion, but it still causes chest pain, shortness of breath, etc.
So are you saying that the plaque in the blood vessel is, when you say eroding, you mean kind of breaking off and then going into the smaller blood vessels? Am I understanding that correctly? Okay.
It's more of an erosive phenomenon where it can actually start to, exactly as you described it, have this thrombotic, you know, thrombus is the name of a blood clot. Mm-hmm. You have this clot showering and it's breaking off and it's getting stuck in these micro circulation vessels. And at the same time, as it's breaking off, it can cause spasm of the blood vessels of the heart as well.
And that's why it's called coronary microvascular disease. So in men, it's building up. In women, it's breaking off and affecting other parts.
Correct. And okay. We still, you know, and microvascular disease can be seen as a stable phenomenon that's happening in the outpatient setting. And at the same time, it can also be seen as something that's happening as an acute phenomenon in the presentation of a heart attack. And men are not immune to this condition either. In fact, high blood pressure can also lead to microvascular disease, because mm-hmm. as the muscle of the heart starts to get very thick, you can start to compress those microvessels and get abnormalities in the microcirculation. So it's not that it just happens in women. We see mm-hmm. it in men too, but it often has a preferential impact in women. We also see a lot of relationship between the impact of emotional stress and the development of microvascular disease.
You're listening to JFK Spotlight on Health. It's brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK University Medical Center. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz, and we're speaking with Dr. Sheila Sani, board-certified cardiologist and interventional cardiologist at Hackensack Meridian Health and director of the Women's Heart Program at Sani Heart Center, part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Medical Group. So, what are some of the risk factors that are unique to women and their risk of heart disease?
So women have multiple checkpoints in their lifetime that are moments to take a pause and recognize that their heart could be at risk. The first stress test a woman ever endures is pregnancy. About 10 to 20% of women who are pregnant will suffer some form of a cardiac health issue. And that falls under the umbrella of a high blood pressure syndrome, such as preeclampsia, or even just uncontrolled high blood pressure in pregnancy is a risk factor, as is gestational diabetes. So these are risk factors that not only do OBGYN physicians search for and treat patients for so they can have their baby successfully, but that cardiologists collaborate with OBGYNs that are taking care of patients that are having these conditions so that in their lifetime, we can catch them and prevent heart disease. Because if you have a condition that affects your vascular system when you're pregnant, whether it's hypertension, diabetes, or preeclampsia, you have just quadrupled your risk of having heart disease, and you have increased the chances of your heart disease occurring earlier. So that's the first and foremost that I think gets missed most often. Mm-hmm. I often take a pregnancy history in all of my women patients who present to my Women's Heart Program because it's so important. The second checkpoint is menopause. And it's not that menopause directly increases your risk for heart disease. It's that once you reach menopause, your cholesterol parameters change because as estrogen decreases in the body, we lose the protective effect that estrogen used to have in our body on our cholesterol. So I often see women I often ask women all the time about menopause, when they hit menopause. You know, if you hit early menopause, if you had a total hysterectomy and now you've been menopausal since you were 40, we've got to look at your cholesterol and make sure everything is okay. Mm-hmm. So menopause affects women, as does inflammatory conditions such as lupus, rheumatoid arthritis. These inflammatory conditions can accelerate the formation of plaque in the blood vessels of the heart. And lastly, women who have undergone radiation, chemotherapy, treatments for breast cancer, or other forms of cancer where the radiation treatment was centered towards the chest, this can also accelerate heart disease.
Let me ask you this. What is the significance of the developing of the Women's Heart Program affiliated with Hackensack Meridian Health?
The significance of having a Women's Heart Program is that women need a dedicated place where they can make a plan and take action against their risk for heart disease. And women are often lost in the healthcare system. You know, many times women, like I just mentioned, OBGYNs, many times it's a woman's concept of getting health is through her OBGYN. And there's a lot of risk factors that are getting missed because women are not putting themselves first. So when you have a dedicated Women's Heart Program, you're not only bringing in women who can educate themselves on how they can take better care of their overall cardiovascular health, but you're also giving other physicians an opportunity to refer to a place where a woman can get dedicated cardiovascular care. And then it really creates a sense of patient-physician advocacy in one centralized location that can lead to not only building, you know, great educational programs for the community, but also building opportunities for clinical research in this very underrepresented population.
Okay, so are there differences in how women and men are treated?
Yes, and that's another reason why a Women's Heart Program is so important for the advocacy of equal treatment between men and women. Studies have shown that women are less likely to receive medical treatments such as aspirin or statins to prevent future heart attacks compared with men. Women are also less likely to receive life-saving interventions compared with men because they've often been perceived as too frail or delicate. And also women haven't been studied. So you have a group of physicians who might not know the data, and they think that just because a woman wasn't studied, she shouldn't get this type of medical treatment. But often the lack of awareness that women could be suffering from a heart attack because the symptom might not look like how it looks in a man can also lead to the under-recognition of a woman having a heart attack, which leads to worse outcomes for women. In other words, if a woman is having a heart attack and it's not recognized, that can lead to heart failure. And we see these outcomes in our clinical data.
All right, so how can we reduce the risk?
By getting women to get checked out by their physicians and getting ownership over their quote-unquote numbers. And there are three numbers I want women to focus on. Okay. Their high blood pressure, and don't just let a doctor tell you, your blood pressure is great. Get the number. Because our hypertension guidelines changed very recently, and high blood pressure is diagnosed greater than 130 over 80. And that's a new cutoff that really changed more than 40 million Americans with high blood pressure that previously didn't have high blood pressure. And that's because clinical studies have shown that tighter control of blood pressure has been shown to prevent heart disease and stroke. So first and foremost, get your blood pressure numbers, get your glucose numbers, find out if you have the risk, if you have risk of diabetes by getting your hemoglobin A1C checked. And third, find out what your cholesterol is and get those numbers. Rather than having somebody interpret the number and give you a diagnosis, get the actual number so you can look into it yourself, because there is often risk that's hidden in these numbers. In other words, it's a spectrum. There's no cutoff that's ever going to make you feel very good or very bad. If you're borderline, it's important for you to know that you're borderline so you can make lifestyle adjustments. The other thing you want to do is you want to quit smoking. If you're a smoker, especially if you're a woman, smoking is so dangerous for women. It affects women in many ways worse than men because women have smaller blood vessels and smoking can really tighten up those blood vessels and can lead to development of disease in the legs, the brain, the heart. You should also think about what you've been eating and what kind of exercise you're doing. If you haven't been exercising, start by walking more. You know, park further from the entrance to wherever you're going so that you get more steps in your day and start small. The cumulative effects of exercise every day is what matters. So if you can't get 30 minutes in at one time, 10 minutes a few times a day is an excellent way to start. And then in terms of eating, we all struggle with what's the best diet, but just keep it simple. Eat clean, eat green, and eat lean. So if you're going to be eating chicken or fish or even a little bit of red meat, make sure it's lean and it's not fatty. Try to eat more greens that are fresh. And when we say eat clean, eat fresh whole grain foods that are not processed and not fried. That's the simplest way to keep your diet organized and to try to focus to healthier eating habits.
Okay, one more question before we go. When it comes to walking, and let's take a man or woman who's never really walked for exercise. Of course, they're walking around, and maybe they have even have a watch that tells them how many steps they have, and maybe they hit that 10,000 at the end of the day. But for someone who's going to go for a walk on a daily basis, what would be the minimum that you recommend that they walk? And how can they build up to a more brisk walk or maybe even a run? Because obviously, you don't just start running if you've never done it before.
Right. And you know, as a disclaimer, you should definitely get checked out by your physician or a cardiologist before you begin any exercise program if you have been sedentary.
Right.
But in terms of your question, the American Heart Association recommends 150 minutes of moderate intensity exercise per week. So you can break that up however way you want.
Okay.
You know, 30 minutes of walking is excellent. And if you can do that 5 days a week, that's fantastic. But if you need to break it up into smaller increments and then on the weekend do it for longer, you really want to try to get 30 minutes of exercise 5 days a week. And you can break up that exercise into like 10 minutes of cardiovascular and 20 minutes of weight training, core training, resistance training, because doing strength training is equally important for health. It's very good for your bones, and it also increases your basal metabolic rate. But I try to encourage my patients to work themselves up to 30 minutes of walking at least 5 days a week. That's ideal.
Okay, great. Dr. Sheila Sahni, board-certified cardiologist and interventional cardiologist at Hackensack Meridian Health, director of the Women's Heart Program at Sahni Heart Center, part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Medical Group. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us, and thank you for sharing all that very valuable information.
Thank you for having me.
How can one get a hold of you?
Oh, well, the best way to get a hold of me is through our website, which is SahniHeartCenter.com, as well as our office, 732-396-9500. And I am accepting appointments for all new patients.
Wonderful. Doctor, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Sheila Sahni of Hackensack Meridian Health. So that concludes another edition of JFK Spotlight on Health, and it's brought to us by Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK University Medical Center. Keep getting better. For more information, go to doctors.hackensackmeridianhealth.org. And for a podcast of this show or any previous broadcasts, you can go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. I'm Joel Katz.